Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Porter was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex
show. Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school,
know about
pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your word that baby preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Here with my co-host, a man who just left a small cell with Paris Hilton, Rick Hess.
Wow. Left a small cell with Paris Hilton.
You know, Liam wrote some other stuff, but I didn't really get it.
Yeah, you know, did you see the stick picture she drew of herself during her prison stay?
No.
Yes.
Did you see? Is this not? It makes me worry. I mean, it looks like something that a seventh grader would doodle. And she had that straight hair like the kids draw, and the big kind of vaguely space alien eyes. And there was even somebody on the TV.
Yeah, right? And did you see she wrote a letter and dotted all the I's with hearts and couldn't even use its correctly? It was weak.
And right, because she thanked TMZ for being fair and unbiased in their account of her travails.
Okay, now can we safely assume that Paris Hilton attended private schools? So do you think that this is a mark against the voucher movement?
Ooh. That's it. It's a heavy policy question. I think it's a mark against the Hilton family.
Speaking of the Hilton family, Nikki Hilton was in Greece, we understand, as were you. Did you see her when you were there?
I did not see her, although Tom Hanks was there too, apparently.
Oh.
Apparently, we went out on a catamaran, and the guy's other crew had just spent the night drinking with Tom Hanks. He apparently just bought a house in Antiparos.
Very nice. Well, Rick, I understand that you have some big news to tell our listeners they'll be interested in about what happened in Greece.
Yes, man. We had a lot of really good lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Had some cocktails.
Anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, the water was fabulous.
Well, then I'm going to share it for you.
Okay, baby.
Rick Hess is getting married.
Woohoo!
Can you believe it?
Got engaged, baby.
Rick is engaged to Jolene. Very exciting about this.
Laid the whole thing. I dropped to a knee. We were at the windmill watching the sunset, and I said, "Sweetie pie, won't you be my neighbor?"
Very romantic, Rick. Well, hearts are breaking all across Eduland today. Jolene is a lucky girl.
And I'm a lucky guy.
All right. Well, that's very happy. Well.
Oh, thank you, baby.
We're glad to have you back.
It's good to be back.
It's going to be a happy podcast today.
I'm feeling it.
Okay, good. Well, let's get going. We're going to, of course, play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have a special interview with a special guest who is going to remain secret until later. And then our special producer, Kobe, is going to be our special News of the Weird correspondent. This is a very special podcast.
Dude. We sound sad.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Pardon the Gadfly. Christina, let's kick it off.
All right. Topic one that Rick should be familiar with. Naomi Schaefer Riley writes in the Wall Street Journal about Barak Bengal. No, he's not running for president. Barak got an MBA from Stanford, took over the Oakland Public Schools, and quickly discovered a bureaucracy not much interested in improving. Rick, should we give up on the business leader as superintendent model?
No, absolutely not. You know, I think what Bengal's experience showed as much as anything is that it's silly to imagine that one person's going to come into these large, jaded, dysfunctional systems and somehow magically transform them by themselves. To lead a big organization, you need a raft of good people, a raft of tools, the ability to motivate and reward your good people up and down the outfit. And, if you give these folks those kinds of tools, there's reason to think that some of these folks from outside might be outstanding.
Okay, but isn't that the whole point, that he is supposed to know how to build that kind of team and recruit that kind of talent? I mean, so that seems like a little bit of an excuse being made for him. I mean, he could bring in his senior team. He could bring in new systems and new procedures. You know, I say great, open the doors to new talent for sure, especially at the top of these systems. But I got to say, I think we have to be concerned that there have been some places where these outsiders have come in and they've made some really poor educational decisions because they don't know the education piece. Your good friend Joel Klein, I think, has done a lot of great things in New York, but he really has messed up the curricular piece. I think the same could be said about Alan Berson, that they've trusted the wrong people in education.
I mean, I think there's always this danger, right, when you come from outside into any industry, right, when Lou Gerstner came from tobacco to take over IBM, that there's this question of striking a balance between what skills are you bringing in, what kind of fresh insights and abilities are you bringing in, and what expertise might you be lacking. Yeah, that's always going to be a challenge. you know, to your point about Bengal not bringing the right people in, that's, you know, that's always an interesting question. I don't know. Oof, that's a long bill. I don't know the details in Oakland. But the fact is, it's a whole lot harder than it should be for these people to bring in the teams they need and for them to find the kind of educational expertise they want to get their hands on.
Okay. All right.
Moving on. Last week.
That was very heavy, man.
I was heavy.
You got right into it.
I know. You're just, you know, it's been 2 weeks, Rick. I mean, you got to do some work.
And you know why you're embittered about Bengal? I know the answer here.
Because I don't like Bengay?
No. It's because it's an article in which you were not quoted. And we know how that just rubs your hide.
All I'm saying is you got something like 3 or 4 quotes in that article. They could have shared the love a little bit.
But it
was on a weekend, so who reads it anyway?
Yeah.
All right, guys, next topic. Let's go. Last week, Nick Taft came out with a report arguing that the nation is wasting billions of dollars due to teacher attrition. Should we be worried about so many young people leaving the teaching profession?
No. Of course we should not be. Look, this report drives me crazy. It got a lot of press attention last week. They were smart in how they produced it. Lots of state reports and graphs and things that reporters could grab onto. But it's basically a false idea that everybody that's going to come into teaching we're expected that they're going to stay, and they're going to stay for their whole career. I mean, that just doesn't happen in any profession that's hiring a lot of 22-year-olds. People are going to get in. They're going to figure out it's not for them. Now, the real problem is that we're losing the wrong people, that it tends to be the most talented teachers who leave after only 2 or 3 years. And we got to do a lot of things to change the way the system works to get them to stay. But attrition by itself is not always a bad thing.
I mean, you know, the broader context is that the typical American now has 4 jobs between the age of 22 and 30. And, you know, in fact, we would do much better if we want to think in terms of a stable teaching corps. We'd probably do a lot better if we focused our recruitment on people in their 30s who are likely to be working another 20, 30 plus years, mm-hmm. but have already been through a number of jobs and might actually appreciate some of the opportunities teaching provides.
Right. And in terms of costs, I mean, we're spending way more money on the people at the end of the spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, who have higher salaries, maybe burnt out, or just kind of trying to wait for that pension. If you want to save money, you know, be a lot better off figuring out how to get those people out of the classroom.
Yeah, and I think that's right. You know, and this is part of the problem. So, for instance, as much as I thought, you know, Art Levine's report on teacher preparation said some useful things, you know, part of his solution was we need a 5-year teaching credential in which people are going to come in even better prepared. But you know what? When you're 22, 23 years old, you're just, you know, in this day and age, you're not a real good bet to know what you want to do into the year, you know, into the 2030s or 2040s.
All right. Well, Rick, I tell you, I think this whole thing, now that you're engaged, I don't know, there's just a new mature air about you.
I dig that. Yeah. I dig that.
Yeah. I just hope that, you know, we haven't lost fun, Rick.
Well, you know what it is? It's settling back, but it's here. I'm sitting across from you, getting closer and closer to being a dad.
That's true.
And it brings out my mature.
You know,
side.
He's kicking.
Nerd alert!
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Christina. Nerd alert. Parenthood is... All
right, yeah, dude, face it.
Yeah, ouch. Let's go back to the land of 22, 23-year-olds.
Okay. Yeah.
Chris Whittle of Edison School's fame has announced that he's starting a chain of high-end private schools worldwide to cater to the children of plutocrats. What's the lesson? That there's no money to be made in serving poor children? Is this the future of education entrepreneurialism?
I'm waiting for him to announce that he's going to let, like, Einstein Bagel set up in the cafeteria. Profit sharing, rich kids buying pizza bagels. Dude, there is no end to the dollars. I'm sorry. That was off topic a bit. You know what? Part of what this says is when you cater to rich people in any line of work, they got a whole lot of money to spend. Mm-hmm. They've got deep pockets. They'll pay for prestige goods. And, you know, Chris is being smart about seeing an opportunity. There's obviously more money to be made off rich kids and poor kids because rich kids, rich families can go a lot higher than per pupil spending. If we actually want to encourage entrepreneurs to try to serve poor kids, we got to make sure that there's money to be made off of poor kids, which means we need to make sure that there is money attached to them.
Do you realize if we clip that little piece you just said, that we have to make sure that there's money to be made off of poor kids?
I'm an AI. I got no problem with that, baby. Yeah, I'd much rather trust, you know, greedy, smart people trying to figure out how to make money by serving poor kids than trust a whole bunch of well-intentioned people to tell us how much they love poor kids.
Right, right. But it's interesting to look at this industry. It seems like there's a lot of money going into pre-K. There's obviously been a lot of money going to higher ed. You've said this before. Mm-hmm. Now there's money going into these high-end schools. But it doesn't seem like people want to touch the core public education business. It's just too hard to do.
You know, and part of it is that so much money in the core business is locked up. You're serving kids in Washington, D.C. You're not actually able to generate $20,000, $21,000 per pupil, which is, you know, if you simply divide the amount of money D.C. spends on kids by the number of kids, it's $20,000, $21,000, $22,000 a year. What you're getting is $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a year is what charters get or what have you. So part of the reality is there's a lot more money that could potentially be made by serving mm-hmm. these populations. But the way we've structured expenditures and the way we spend money in these systems, it's not going to people who can deliver the goods. It's getting spent on all the infrastructure.
All right. Well, Rick, our listeners are getting their money's worth today. I tell you, you're making up for lost time.
Oof,
good job. Thank you, Christina. That was a nice game of Pardon the Gadfly. Now we have our special secret guest for the interview. And I'm now happy to declare.
Well, first, whoa. Give us a little buildup. To tell us a little bit about the special guest.
Well, here is the buildup. Is this. He has a story to tell, and it's very relevant to the Supreme Court case this week on free speech, the Bong Hits for Jesus case, mm-hmm. where the court held in a divided opinion that, in fact, schools could restrict free speech in this particular case because the Bong Hits for Jesus was promoting illegal drug use, and there was that went against the educational purpose of the school. Now, a decade ago, our guest had an experience. Was it a decade? Less than that. All right. A while ago, our guest had an experience with free speech at school that we think is just going to knock your pajamas off. Liam Julian, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thanks. It's great to be here. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Long time listener.
Uh-huh.
Long time caller.
Long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Liam, tell us what happened to you back when you were in high school.
Well, this came up in a staff meeting the other day, but back when I was in high school, one of my buddies was kicked out of school for, you know, reasons that I thought were unjust.
What were the reasons?
His grades were terrible.
Okay.
Anyhow, what I decided to do was to fight against this by, after school one day, going around school and putting up signs that said, "Let Hiroki stay," that was his name, all over campus. I had about 100, 120 signs that I made at Kinko's. I went around campus, put them up all over the place. Next day, I come to school, second period Spanish. Two of the, they're not really administrators. They're more like henchmen that they kind of just ride around golf carts. Anyway, they came to the Spanish class. We need to see Liam Julian. They walk me down to the office, and I go into the office, and there I am, and I'm sitting at the end of a long conference table, and at the other end is every administrator in the school. Now, the great thing about this was that this all happened during homecoming week, and this day happened to be camo day, so I was in complete camouflage. I had leaves and twigs that I had shoved in this bandana, so anybody looking at this, it looked like a scene out of some sort of guerrilla negotiations in Uganda or something. Anyway, they slide a yellow legal pad down the table, and they, you know, say, "Liam, we need you to write what you did after school yesterday." So I wrote something like, "I went home, and I got a hamburger, and I went to bed," or something like that. I slid it back, and the principal says, "You know, we're not finding this very amusing." She turns around, pushes play on the TV, and there I am on the TV, walking around school, got taped by the surveillance tapes, putting up the signs. The day before, it had been pajama day, so I'm putting up the signs in my pajamas. Mm. But anyway, so, you know, I guess I was kind of caught, and long story short, I got in trouble.
On what grounds?
Subversion, I think, of school authority, something like that. They had been trying to get rid of me for a while. They wanted to expel me, but another buddy that I had kind of done it with, he, I guess, aided and abetted because I used his computer to make the signs. Mm. They really couldn't expel him because his mom worked at the school board offices. So they just suspended us.
So that's interesting, though. So putting up the signs was in and of itself a suspendable offense?
I think they thought that I was trying to subvert authority. And they pointed to some clause in the student code of conduct that said something about subverting authority.
Did you challenge them on this?
No, I didn't like school, so I was fine.
So
I just
how
went
long
to the
were
beach.
You out of school?
Suspended for a day.
What did you do during that day?
My buddy had a beach house, so I went there. Caught up on back copies of Maxim.
You do the crime, you pay the time.
How long does it take you to read a copy of Maxim?
Oh, I don't know. Now, what, 20, 23 minutes?
Do you really read, Maxim?
You flip through your phone. There's always those interesting little articles, but I like to take them on the trip because it's the kind of thing you put it like in your bag mm-hmm. when you're leaving, and it's thick and kind of heavy, and you're done with it, you know, an hour into the flight.
I find it's the same magazine every month.
Okay. Now back to the First Amendment again. So, Liam, when you read the decision the other day, do you feel like your constitutional rights were impinged? I mean, you weren't talking about drug use, you know.
Well, so. that's the thing. I mean, my signs didn't, you know, it wasn't a call to action.
Right.
It simply said, you know, well, I guess it was in a sense. Mm. I guess the call to action was for the administration to reverse their decision.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't that subversive.
I think if you read the decisions in this case, you could say that your constitutional rights were impinged.
I should have written an amicus brief.
The case came out the other way, right?
It did, but on narrow grounds, that it was particularly that the sign was promoting drug paraphernalia, and therefore that the school had reasonable grounds to restrict the free speech.
Right, but on the other hand, if the code of conduct is that students are not permitted to engage in subversive activities.
I don't know, but that code of conduct may impinge his constitutional rights.
What's the statute of limitations? Is it too late?
That's a good question.
I think this is the next big case.
I think my fiance could go back and we could get a test case out of it.
I like it. Wow. Well, Liam, thanks for telling us your story.
Hey, no problem. Thanks again for having me.
Dude, you are better than a robot or the computers or whatever it's called.
We now have time for everyone's favorite. It is with our special correspondent. Liam can't do double duty today. He was our interview. So Kobe gets the call as our correspondent for Education News of the Weird. So Kobe, what is weird this week?
About a month ago, as listeners will recall, our wacky correspondent Liam reported on a case from Boulder High School in my home state of Colorado, where Los Angeles psychologist Joel Becker encouraged students to engage in safe sex and safe drug use since they were, quote, going to do it anyway. A controversy ensued, of course, and soon found its way to that place where rational thought goes to die, the O'Reilly Factor. Boulder High School students Andrew Wishner and Jesse Lang recently appeared on the popular Fox News program, where Wishner told an approving O'Reilly that he thought Becker's words were, quote, totally inappropriate for high schools, let alone anybody to listen to, end quote. Schoolmate Lang disagreed and quoted a passage from O'Reilly's own book where O'Reilly likens a model student, quote, toking on a Saturday night to a brain surgeon enjoying a martini while not on call, end quote. To which O'Reilly, maintaining his cool as always, responded, quote, look, I know what you pinheads think. I never encouraged anyone to take drugs in the O'Reilly Factor for kids, end quote. He then returned to the seemingly comatose Wishner, who ended the segment by sucking up to O'Reilly some more. Rick, have you ever wondered what it's like to enter the no-spin zone?
Does Riley actually say that in his book?
Apparently.
That's funny that he was.
He said the kid took it out of context, but.
Did you see, what was it? Tim Russert, I guess, asked Ann Coulter about this. Did you see this whole Ann Coulter and Elizabeth Edwards exchange? Elizabeth Edwards called in and said, Ann Coulter, why are you being personally hateful to my husband? And Ann Coulter, and she said, would you stop making personal insults? And Ann Coulter said, well, then I just won't write any more books. Elizabeth Edwards said, okay. But afterwards, Russert apparently said to Coulter, well, what point are you making when you talked about Hillary Clinton's chubby legs? And Coulter said she would have to see it in context to be able to explain.
Well, this happens on all sides, right? Maureen Dowd's columns are often not so much about policy, right?
But
personality, would you
Dowd?
Say?
Yes, I would.
Yes, I think yes, so. I would. Well, thank you, Kobe. You know, a little warmed over. But I understand we have a challenge. It's summertime now. Schools are not actually in session in most places, and so it makes Education News of the Weird that much harder to get to.
Well, Liam's so weird, it's just hard to live up to his billing sometimes.
I thought that was pretty decently weird. And yeah. You know what was nice, Mike? I got to say, you played this nicely. The fact that you've not been – have you been on the spin zone?
I've never been on the spin zone.
And yet you played that with complete equanimity. Dude, I got to give you got to give you major chops.
That's right. You know, Checker's been on the spin zone once.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he get spun?
I'm not sure he enjoyed the experience.
Checker?
Yeah.
It's the no spin zone.
When he was...
Oh, right.
Just to clarify.
Yes.
I wonder if he did a little bit of his stutter rap like he does over the intro. Yeah. Maybe that was it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Checker ended up playing a straight man in that interview. And, you know, it's no fun when you don't get to fight. All right. Well, that fire engine sound in the background means that we are out of time.
Let's try to get down the elevator.
That's right. I think the building is on fire. Well, we are taking next week off for the 4th of July, but we will be back after that. Until then,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.